Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and today Santa Claus is coming to town.
That's right. This is an episode about Santa Claus. It's also an episode about gods and our ideas about gods, our god concepts, and what that all means. And we are going to get into the question of whether Santa is a god or not. I do want to just have a couple of quick reminders here as we dive into this one. First of all, yes, this episode has to do with Santa, but if you are tempted to listen to it outside of the holiday season, no worries, because there's going to be a lot of talk that does not directly apply to Santa Claus.
Sure, this is an episode about the cognitive science of religion.
And secondly, we will be discussing the magic of Santa Claus in this episode, so just keep that in mind, parents, if you're listening with your children.
Sure. All right, so most of us would not say that Santa Claus is a god, right? I mean, we don't necessarily – maybe we're not always able to define god in a dictionary definition kind of way. But you have an intuitive sense of how this word is used. And for some reason, Santa Claus doesn't usually fit into that definition, right, that intuitive definition.
Right. Even if you are, let's say – A child who is a Santa fundamentalist, who believes in, you know, very literally in Santa Claus. Even then, I don't think they would necessarily confuse the idea of Santa Claus with the idea of, say, the Judeo-Christian deity.
Sure.
But on the same hand, as we're going to discuss in this episode, there are a lot of similarities. So first of all, I want to just talk a little bit about Santa Claus, this magical being that factors so heavily into Western holiday traditions, as well as traditions around the world that have been influenced by the notion of the great jolly old elf.
Mm-hmm.
The exact mythology is going to vary, of course, but here are just some of the often highlighted aspects of the mythos.
Hit me.
Okay, first of all, Santa is at the very least extremely long-lived, if not undying, immortal, or eternal.
I mean, he's been doing his thing for a long time.
That's right. Secondly, Santa is, I guess you would say, pansophic or all-knowing. He knows when you are sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. I'm not sure he's supposed to know your inner thoughts, but he is privy to an awful lot.
I think a lot of conceptions of Santa would even give him like inner psychic access.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if Santa can – well, Santa can at least see what you're doing when other people aren't around to see what you're doing. He sees what you're doing in private, right?
Mm, yes.
That seems like that's verging on – I mean, it's got to be like supernatural there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's not like he's just getting reports about your behavior.
Right. He definitely has supernatural abilities. It comes down to whether he – can see inside your brain or not, if he can see your thoughts at all, if he can anticipate your actions based on that information. Also, he receives mail from all over the world, often through magical means or at least magical variations of the postal system.
Mm-hmm.
That includes things like letters can find him even no matter where you mail them. You can mail them at the zoo. You can mail them at home. You can mail them through the chimney, things like that.
You know, another thing that's very common about gods is they tend to live in inaccessible places, if not in a like extra dimensional, completely fundamentally inaccessible place. Even when they live on Earth, they tend to be at the top of a mountain or at the bottom of the ocean or something like
that. Yeah, I think the mountaintop god is an excellent example because in the modern sense, what is the top of the world mountain? It is the North Pole.
Of course.
Which is where Santa Claus is said to reside, and it is an insanely hostile environment.
Fighting off polar bears.
Yeah. And he seems to reside there without any outside support aside from the milk and cookies that he collects every year.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the big one, Santa can travel around the entire world and visit every home in a single evening every year.
I remember thinking about this as a child and thinking like, well, I don't know. That sounds really difficult, but it's probably not impossible.
Right.
It seemed within the stretching of plausibility to me.
Right. Like the magic makes sense at first, and then you start thinking about the magic and you're like, wow, this is some potent magic.
Uh-huh.
And then along the way, you know, you introduce some science fiction concepts and you introduce some elaborate visions of the nature of time. And, okay, you can create some versions of it that makes a little bit more sense perhaps. But at the very least, Santa has amazing abilities to travel in ways that a mortal human cannot.
Of course.
And there's much more than that we might add based not only on beliefs but on films as well that feature Santa Claus. So he has been spotted in the presence of inhuman beast men, as we discussed in our Krampus episode.
Okay. Sometimes appears in the guise of Tim Allen and Goldberg.
That's true. Also Hulk Hogan. Didn't Hulk Hogan play a Santa Claus?
Oh, I don't remember that.
He
Goldberg, definitely, in the movie Santa Sleigh, which is – you know, you can probably guess what it's about.
Also, Santa can communicate with magical deer that also fly and enable him to fly. He can control robots as he has the power over all toys and machines that might be argued to be toys. This, of course, from Santa Claus versus the Martians.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in that, Santa Claus is also drawn into an interplanetary dispute. Santa associates with known wizards such as Merlin. If you watch the old Mexican Santa Claus film, we, of course, see him hanging out with Merlin and then dealing with demons, engaging in direct conflict with at least demons who serve the Christian devil, if not the Christian devil himself.
Oh, no. Yeah. He straight up fights demons in the movie. Oh, that devil.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like Gandalf versus the Balrog. It's Santa versus whatever that demon's name is.
Yeah. So, I mean, he gets into some serious theological territory in that film.
Uh-huh.
He also may or may not play the saxophone when visiting Asian countries, which isn't as remarkable, I guess, but it's an additional wrinkle in the myth of Santa.
Now, we are obviously not the first people to raise these parallels between the Santa Claus that brings magical delight to children all over the place and you know, basically gods that are found throughout history all over the world. In fact, I would say it's almost like a cliched joke at this point to kind of point out that Santa Claus and God are in some sense interchangeable to many children.
Yeah, my favorite example of this goes back to the year 2000 and one of our shared favorite shows, The Simpsons. There's the episode where Bart goes in to his bedroom and he kneels by his bed and then he begins to pray. And he says, quote, "Dear Santa, if you bring me lots of good stuff, I promise not to do anything bad between now and when I wake up. Amen."
Ha ha. It's the best kind of Simpsons joke because there's a joke in what he says mm-hmm. between now and when I wake up. But actually, the even funnier part is the very concept of him saying it, that he's praying to Santa in the first place.
Yeah. And I one of the things I always loved about it is that it takes me a second to catch it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not instantly clear that it's something out of the ordinary. I think I vaguely remember almost doing this at one point as a child even, sort of at least subconsciously getting the idea confused. You know, praying to Santa is only a few degrees to the left of sending a letter to an entity that can observe your every move, and it's not that different from the idea of praying to this divine entity that you're told about, say, at Sunday school.
Yeah, and so for the rest of the episode today, we're going to be focusing on a paper that actually asks the question of, well, in the terms of cognitive science of religion, does Santa Claus actually qualify as a god or not? Does he match the other things that would be called a god within this this sort of like scientific academic framework?
In particular, we're going to be looking at an article by experimental psychologist Justin Barrett, published in the Journal of Cognition and Culture back in 2008. And Barrett is an interesting character. He wrote a book titled Why Would Anyone Believe in God? And he himself is a Christian, but he also sees God as a byproduct of our mental architecture. And he sees this in a way where these two concepts have room to coexist.
Yeah, he seems like an interesting figure to me. Like, having read a bit about him, I think he's in the spirit of those who would believe that like the existence of God is not in conflict with naturalistic explanations for religion.
Yeah. Like, for instance, when he was asked about this potential conflict in a 2007 New York Times article titled Darwin's God, he said the following, quote, Christian theology teaches that people were crafted by God to be in a loving relationship with him and other people. Why wouldn't God then design us in such a way as to find belief in divinity quite natural? Suppose science produces a convincing account for why I think my wife loves me. Should I then stop believing that she does? Which I thought was a nice answer to that question.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like you can put together all kinds of coherent scientific explanations for what the feeling of love is, mm-hmm. why this is an emotion that's generated by the primate brain, what kind of relationship it has to, you know, the evolutionary pressures that created our bodies and our brains. But at the same time, it doesn't make the love not real. And so applying that to religion, you could say, okay, well, here's a list of reasons we think that like evolution, natural selection could have shaped our brains to be geared toward religion. So you have totally mechanistic, natural type explanations for where religion comes from. And yet you could still, under this theory, potentially believe your religion to be true or multiple religions to be true.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that goes along with the way we tend to approach religious concepts on the show, I think, that we can certainly explain where they come from. We can discuss, how they evolve over time and the different influences wound up in them. But at the same time, we can respect that yes, this story, this myth, this idea, this concept can still be very weighty and very important to the individuals that value it.
Well, yeah, and that also, though, gets into another layer of complexity, which is what it actually means to, quote, believe in a religion. Like, can you believe in a religion? Does that necessarily mean that you accept, say, its story of the creation of the world as literally true?
Right.
Or that it suggests – or that it that its propositions about metaphysics are literally physically real?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to drive home a fact here, again, parental warning – Santa Claus is not real in the sense that that Santa Claus does not physically exist in the world. He is not actually doing these great deeds that we attribute to him. But on the other hand, he is obviously an important cultural idea. And for my own part, like, you know, I try and drive home the importance of mythology and belief alongside the importance of fundamental reality, I guess, mm-hmm. Scientific reality, when talking about these things with my own son. Currently he's really invested in the idea of Santa, but I am hopefully laying the groundwork that when Santa falls from the lofty realm of presumed magical reality, he's not going to plummet into the hellish depths of lies and inaccuracies. He will instead fall into this realm of mythological and this realm of magical concepts that are valued by human culture. if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, Santa Claus is not physically real, but the magic of Santa Claus is absolutely real. Like, it's one of the most powerful mind states that I can recall from my entire life is the anticipation magic of the Christmas season when I was young.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also remember sort of going through the struggle of then realizing, okay, Santa Claus is not objectively real. But then gradually then growing to realize that, okay, the idea of Santa Claus can still be very important and can still be very real in that sense. In the way – the same way that, you know, one grows to learn that fictional characters and other stories can be extremely important to us in a way that – where they're sometimes even more important than flesh and blood individuals and in very real events in the world. But anyway, I want to get back to Barrett's work. Again, he's working in the realm of cognitive science of religion, exploring, in his words, quote, why religious thoughts and actions only occupy a small area in the vast landscape of possible belief systems.
And that's actually, I think, a fascinating question, right? Like, religious beliefs could, in theory, be anything.
Mm-hmm.
Anything could be a religious belief. Example, my friend Julian believes that a breakfast Crunchwrap Supreme that he got from Taco Bell in 2017 is the creator of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And only by its zesty salvation can he be saved from annihilation. Why is it obvious this is a joke? Seriously, like, how come as soon as I said that, you knew that I was kidding? You don't need to go, like, look that up on Google and see if there really is a sincere Crunchwrap Supreme cult. You just immediately know that people don't believe that sort of thing as a sincere religion. And yet people believe in all kinds of strange things, things that would, of course, seem strange to those who don't share their religious beliefs. So why is it that religious beliefs can and do involve all kinds of strange things and narratives and propositions? And yet there's actually a pretty constrained set of things, even within that fantastical landscape, that would truly seem acceptable as a god or a religious narrative. Like, for some reason, thumbs up to the immortal, all-powerful person who reads your thoughts as God, but thumbs down to the fast food item as creator God, right? So, like, religious beliefs are not usually constrained by things like the normal functioning of physics or biology, but they are clearly constrained by something. If they weren't constrained by something, it wouldn't be obvious that the Crunchwrap Supreme God was a joke.
Yeah, yeah. I think it is fascinating that, yes, okay, world religion involves so many wonderful concepts and so many things that when you're first introduced to them, they seem strange and new and perplexing at times. And we celebrate that on this show. And yet at the same time, there's not a tremendous amount of difference between, the details of this religion and the next religion.
Well, yeah, there is this funny tension where in one sense there's incredible diversity and difference, but on the other hand, and that's all constrained within some kind of lane that mm-hmm. we sort of have a sense for. You might not be able to define exactly what all the parameters are, though Barrett's going to try to do that in a minute. But you've got a sense that, like, for some reason, the Crunchwrap doesn't work. That's just not a thing people would believe in as God. You just know it automatically. So what do people's actual beliefs in gods seem to have in common? Barrett argues that the cognitive science of religion has actually been pretty successful in identifying the most common features of human religious beliefs, including what kinds of concepts people most often find intuitive as gods. And I guess we'll get into those in just a minute. But first, we should talk about some of his basic criteria for what even constitutes the category.
Right. So the first one, and this is a big one, is that multiple individuals must share a given idea for it to be a genuine culture or religious concept. And this is kind of a no-brainer, but it's important to note. He gives it this example. If one person believes their lamp can grant wishes and control the weather, that's not a god. That's just one person who has a crazy idea about their lamp. But if a bunch of people share this idea about a given lamp, it might just be a god concept.
Sure. And I agree that religion has a very strong and possibly necessary social component. And yet I do think there are some interesting counterexamples that we might want to think about, like hermetic mystics who live in isolation. They cut themselves off from the world to develop private, personal, almost secretive relationships with and understandings of God or of the gods. And yet I think Barrett is still correct because we don't usually grant these idiosyncratic, private, mystical practices the status of a religion unless they're supported by a wider structure of belief shared by larger numbers of people. Like the mystical traditions often tend to be a kind of monastic offshoot or branch of larger religions with regular social adherence.
Right, right. Like, so yes, while we may celebrate the ideas of, say, someone like a William Blake, mm-hmm. you know, who certainly had his own sort of spin on what God was and what the cosmology of the universe happened to be, but we're probably not going to buy into every detail of it.
Right.
We're willing to sort of stand a foot back and say, like, okay, he has his own take on this, mm-hmm. But I'm still keeping to the canon. You know, this is the extended universe Star Wars, and I'm more of the Star Wars films.
Right. And we accept Blake's idiosyncratic ideas as religious because I think they grow out of a larger existing religion. You know,
right.
they're this kind of extended universe, the expanded universe of Christianity.
I guess one can also say that it helps in these cases if other people do not start flocking to your extended universe concept of religion, because then you stand the risk of being a heresy.
Yeah, or creating a new different religion.
Right.
Yeah, and that's another thought entirely. It seems to me also that only widely distributed beliefs are likely to have stable contents, because one member of the religion tends to mediate any potential like deviation from the orthodoxy by another member of the religion. But private religious beliefs, they seem to me radically unstable. You know, they're liable to change constantly.
It's like asking how many editors have access to a given wiki page.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's a Wikipedia page and it's one that is that gets a lot of traffic and has a lot of eyes on it, you know, by and large, you can assume that the information there is probably going to be on the level, or if anything crazy is added, it's going to be taken out pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The Inquisition is going to move in on those heretics. Now, if it is an off-brand wiki and it has like two editors or one editor, then it's up for grabs, right?
Right. Yeah, maybe one day somebody gets a wild hair. They're like, I'm going to go in and make some major changes. Those changes, they probably stick, right? Nobody comes in to change it back. I mean, there's no controlling influence.
Right. And then if it does change, you know, when it does change over time, I think the idea of a high-profile Wikipedia page or a widely accepted god, like the changes are going to occur gradually and they're going to emerge from the culture at large.
Yes. Having more adherence makes an orthodoxy more generally stable. Though, of course, they do still change over time.
Oh, yes.
It's
mm-hmm.
just there's just less potential for sudden radical change, I think.
Right. Unless certain individuals have a tremendous amount of power over it. And then in that case, you know, you have like the ancient Egyptian model, where suddenly a ruler decides, actually, it's just the sun disk, and that's what we're doing now.
Exactly, but that was one guy, and it didn't stick.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think ultimately I agree with Barrett that if we're going with normal usage, what people usually mean when they talk about a religious belief, it needs to be a distributed belief that's
right.
held by a decent number of people. I'm not sure exactly what the number is, but like private beliefs of a single person or a handful of people, I probably don't count as religions yet.
All right, number two. Religious concepts and God concepts can spread due to, quote, features of human minds that transcend cultural environmental variations, unquote. And I'm assuming that something like the fear of death and the desire to avoid pain might be such features as an example.
Yeah, you're correct about that. I mean, what he means is just that it's obvious that influences on religion can be cultural or social, right? They can come from, you know, just contingent facts about history and what else is going on in the culture and politics and all that. But there can be these – what he's arguing is that there are these internal factors as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what the cognitive science of religion is about. It's about brains, right? There are some religious beliefs that will be better adapted to survive in the environment of the human primate brain than other beliefs will be, regardless of cultural factors. Like some beliefs just fit like a puzzle piece with our instincts, emotional tendencies, cognitive capacities, and others don't fit quite so well. I was trying to think of a few simple, obvious examples. Here's a Clarkian kind of one. You probably wouldn't find a popular religious belief where you had to remember a name for God that was 18 million syllables. syllables long, right?
Right.
Because the cognitive constraints of memory put limits on what types of God beliefs there are. You wouldn't expect a concept of God to be successful if it just couldn't be remembered. Here's another one. Due to natural features of emotion and motivation in human brains, you wouldn't expect to find beliefs in a God that you are required to love and obey and who rewards you for your love and obedience with eternal torture in the hell of coconut crabs.
Right.
You know, that this just goes counter natural instincts about motivation. Your brain doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it has to be offering you something that fits the mold for your biological life and the mind that governs your behavior in that biological life.
Yeah. So I think that's a pretty standard thing of cognitive science of religion. There are, of course, going to be extremely powerful cultural factors determining what kind of religious beliefs proliferate, but there are also some probably biological neuroscientific factors that contribute as well.
And speaking of biology, the third requirement that Barrett lays out is that some features of the human mind are products of human biology as it interacts with the natural world, apart from cultural environmental variations. So maybe the pain example from above fits here, but there may be better examples.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think the pain thing works great. I mean, this is just saying like our brains are shaped by our evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Of course they are. And they're filled with contents from culture, but they still have some innate kind of tendencies that are just like part of your body. That's just how brains usually work. One of them is that we're motivated to seek pleasure and avoid pain. You know, it's like it's really hard to get around that standard way that brains work.
All right. So a big concept in gods, of course, is that a god doesn't just need to exist within the minds of a particular set of people. The god needs to be able to travel. It needs to be accepted by new people, across space and time.
Yeah, it needs mimetic survival advantages. It needs to be able to spread and take root in new environments.
So we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to get into Barrett's ideas regarding the five features that a god must have to successfully travel. And this according to the cognitive science of religion. And then we'll eventually get into questions regarding Santa Claus himself. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astaproallergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back.
All right, we're discussing how this paper about whether or not Santa Claus actually counts as a god, as usually defined by the criteria of the cognitive science of religion. And this psychologist, Justin Barrett, has in this article, he lays out five normal criteria that gods really have to be successful and be thought of as gods.
All right, this first one is going to sound familiar, and that is that gods must be counterintuitive, or more specifically, they have to be minimally counterintuitive. And if this sounds familiar, it's because we did a whole episode on it.
Totally. It originally aired in August 2018. It was called The Gods Must Be Counterintuitive. And we talked about myths and folktales, including religious characters and narratives, with an eye toward the question of what makes one successful and another unsuccessful. In secular narratives, like, why does everybody know the story of Cinderella, but there is no Walt Disney's The Donkey Cabbages? We talked about The Donkey Cabbages in this episode. It's a fairy tale that it just doesn't seem to work as well as Cinderella because it's just crammed with counterintuitive stuff. On the other hand, you could think of tons of mundane, boring stories that don't proliferate as well as Cinderella. But in a religious context, or especially in ancient religious context, why does one religion spread far and wide and another one just never take off? Again, we should acknowledge there are going to be hugely important other, you know, non-brain-based factors influencing this, like political and social contingencies. You know, the religion of a powerful, successful empire tends to spread, right?
Right.
So there's no sense ignoring those factors. Those are obviously very important. But are there factors just in the human animal, in the brain as well? And cognitive science of religion tends to think, yeah, there are probably a few factors in our brains, about our brains, that make some religions more successful than others. And in this episode from 2018, we discussed a line of research positing that a major factor in the success of a narrative or a religion, at least in the pre-modern context, was mnemonic resilience. That means how easily a story is remembered, how easily a story survives in the memory. Most religion for most of history, of course, has been spread not by holy texts or anything, but by word of mouth, right? You've got to spread a religion by telling people about it because most people in history have been illiterate. And so what kinds of things are easier to remember when you're trying to spread them around the world? Well, psychologists had already found evidence that people remember lists of items better when that list contains one or two strange items that don't seem to fit with the other items on the list.
Oh, yes.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, yeah. Like if you're at a grocery store and you're spying on what the person in front of you is buying, you're going to remember it if there's something that is completely out of keeping with the rest of it, that doesn't assemble in your head into an easily definable meal.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. Like it would seem to suggest by this principle that if you're looking at what somebody has in their cart, you'd remember every item they have in their cart better if it's like mostly normal groceries with a couple of really weird things in there.
Yeah, like if someone were buying pie crust, whipped cream, frozen strawberries, you think, oh, they're making strawberry pie, and then you'd forget about it. But if they're buying whipped cream, pie crust, and then something else. Like
a whole fish.
A whole fish, yeah. Exactly. You'd be like, oh my God, they're making a fish pie with whipped cream on top and a graham cracker crust. That is crazy. And then you'd be telling everyone you knew about it.
Yeah, so at least as far as lists go, lists of things, it seems that it's easier to remember something that's like mostly normal with a couple of weird elements than it is to remember something that's totally bonkers or totally mundane. And so one of the papers we looked at in this episode also applied this principle to the intuitiveness of elements in a story, like a folk tale or a religious narrative. This was by Noren Zion, Atran, Faulkner, and Schaller in Cognitive Science in 2006 called Memory and Mystery, The Cultural Selection of Minimally Counterintuitive Narratives. And so basically, the short story is this paper found some evidence to support the hypothesis that the kinds of stories people remember best are minimally counterintuitive narratives, not stories that are straightforward and mundane, not stories that are crammed with weird outlandish stuff, but stories in the middle, sort of toward one end, like stories that are mostly straightforward with a small number of strange or fantastical counterintuitive elements.
So for instance, a humanoid elephant is a great concept. An old man who lives in the sky is a great concept, and these concepts travel reasonably well.
Yes. And just as a tie-in to this older episode, I remember one thing we talked about in there. We talked about a number of papers that Justin Barrett was a co-author of. Because, you know, he does a lot in the cognitive science of religion, including one that I still remember I thought was very interesting. It was about anthropomorphization in the psychology of religion. And this paper was published in the journal Cognitive Psychology in 1996. And essentially, it was by Barrett and Kyle, and it found that people, quote, spontaneously anthropomorphize God in their reasoning, even if doing so contradicts their stated theological beliefs. So like when they don't remember to avoid doing so, if you're not there reminding them what their previously stated theological beliefs are, people tend to start thinking of God as like a normal human agent with just like big supernatural powers, but basically with a human brain.
Yeah. Like I can definitely relate to this because I tend to think when I you know, think about concepts of a monotheistic deity, I think of, you know, something more surreal or psychedelic. I think of, you know, like a, some sort of like triangular non-physical entity, or I think of, you know, something that is, you know, something where the, you know, the God is singular, but also all these other gods, you know, I throw a lot of concepts at it, but
like the ground of being, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Stuff like that. But if I'm not thinking too hard about it, if I'm, say, just like listening to somebody at church talk or I'm reflecting on some, you know, just on the nature of God, I'll fall back into the sky daddy mode where it's like an old bearded man in the sky reaching out his finger to touch the living, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then I'll have to be like, well, wait, no, that's not what I've been filling my head with. It's a, you know, space triangle, et cetera.
Yeah. And so Barrett and Kyle find that this tendency is very common. They say, you know, even if you think of God as like the ground of being or the force or even, you know, to get into a specific religion, like in specific monotheisms, you might find people with very carefully calibrated theologians type points of view, you know, where they actually have meticulously formed beliefs about like what God can and can't know and what how the mind of God works and all that kind of stuff. But like if you just kind of get them thinking without reminding them that that's what their stated beliefs are, they just sort of start thinking about God like a person with a human brain.
Yeah, and this can also be like super irritating if you're trying to cultivate an idea of the Almighty as being, say, gender neutral or even being feminine as opposed to masculine. Mm-hmm. And then when you're not thinking about it, you fall right back into it being a, you know, traditional masculine, you know, patriarchal being.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess there's that tendency too. Probably pushing on like specific personality attributes and stuff and not just like the anthropomorphization. Though they do say, the authors here say that constantly reminding people about their own stated theological beliefs can help attenuate the anthropomorphization impulse, right? You know, if you're like, hey, remember what you said you believe God was like this, like that'll obviously will help some cut down on it. But they suggest here that this may indicate a strong tendency to anthropomorphize all agents, no matter what kind of being they are. Dogs become humans. Computers become humans. The world spirit becomes a human. Everything that appears appears to have any kind of independent action or is believed to have any kind of independent action basically just becomes a human.
Well, that's the theory of mind, right? Like it's there so we can understand primarily what our fellow humans are doing. But then it can actually be very helpful in trying to figure out what non-human animals are wanting to do. I was reading a little bit about this in terms of veterinary science and how, you know, like there's the older tradition of saying like don't – or it goes beyond veterinary science and science in general, just the study of animals.
Right.
And say like there's the idea of like, you know, don't think of it as a person. Don't anthropomorphize it at all. Mm. Don't think about its feelings. And then there are some who say, well, actually, you know, we should use theory of mind to a safe degree to figure out what is going on in the minds of an animal. But then if you're anthropomorphizing everything, if you are, in the words of a creative writing teacher I once had, if you anthropomorphize like a mad god, then that's where we get into problems. And also that's where we end up creating some of the more, inspired concepts in human culture as well.
Yeah, totally. I guess so to bring it back, yes, as Barrett says, according to the cognitive science of religion, it seems true that gods must be in some way counterintuitive, ideally minimally counterintuitive, having some unusual aspects like maybe say being invisible and all powerful. But they don't have to be all powerful. There are also minor gods that still qualify as gods, right?
Right.
Invisible and having some kind of non-normal powers or attributes.
Right. I mean, basically, I like to play the game of like just keep adding counterintuitive aspects to a particular deity and decide at which point it's silly and no longer intimidating.
Right.
Like a strange tall man comes out of the shadows and gives me commandments. Okay, that's great. All right, let's add that he has the head of a dog. Okay, even better. Hybrids are a huge part of religious concept.
Now he's got crab claws.
Then he has crab claws, right. And then, okay, it's one's a crab claw and one is a hand puppet.
Uh-huh.
And so forth. Like every time you add something else to it, it becomes a little bit more ridiculous and a little harder to take. And that seems to be part of the whole minimally counterintuitive.
Yes, but if they've got to at least be counterintuitive because if you say like, this is my buddy Jeff, he's God, he doesn't have anything unusual about him. Like there are no – he doesn't have any powers. He's not invisible. He can't fly. He's not omniscient, omnipotent, nothing like that. He's just Jeff. That's not – nobody thinks that's a God.
Now, Jeff would probably at least – pass the next one. This is number two on Barrett's list. Gods must be intentional agents. Barrett uses the example of two minimally counterintuitive concepts, an invisible potato versus a talking potato.
Okay, both minimally counterintuitive, but one works better as a god than another.
Yeah, only the latter is viable candidate for godhood because it implies agency. A god must have agency and work as an intentional agent. Now, this concept does make me think about ideas of, say, slumbering gods, dead gods, and mindless gods, at least in fiction, such as, you know, Lovecraft's Azazoth comes to mind.
You got me on Azazoth recently, but I looked it up. It's Azathoth.
Azathoth.
I'm sorry to correct you.
Oh, that would – yeah, it would have the Egyptian Thoth aspect to it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, Azathoth or Azazoth, he doesn't care because he's mindless. He doesn't even know his own name. He's just swirling chaos at the middle of the universe, gnawing on himself while, blind monsters play flutes. But like this would be an example of, first of all, it's a god that nobody actually worships. It is a fictional deity.
Sure.
But it is at least the concept of a deity that is mindless.
Yes. Now, I think this is another reason that like the Crunchwrap Supreme could not be a viable god.
Right. Because it's essentially Azathoth, the mindless being at the center of the chaotic universe.
Exactly. It's an inanimate object that symbolizes primordial chaos.
Yeah.
Can't talk, has no intentions, isn't going to do much.
Right. All right, we're going to jump in here and take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really.
It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
And we're back.
All right, so let's move on to the third requirement. Gods must possess strategic information. So in other words, the gods or God must have some ideas, some advice, or some secret knowledge that can improve your life here on earth. Perhaps it's a set of laws, a revelation that there are no laws, or knowledge about the coming end times, or the God must have privileged knowledge. He knows what you've done or the nature of your inner thoughts or what will happen to you in the future.
Yes. Now, I think it's very important to note that this does not mean the same thing as like omniscience, mm-hmm. which would be a omniscience. All-knowingness would be a form of strategic information. It would be like the ultimate form of strategic information. But omniscience is a property only some gods possess, right? The strategic information idea here just requires that a god knows something valuable or relevant. For example, the version of God depicted in the Garden of Eden story does not appear to be all-knowing. Like he walks in the garden, he has limited perspective. It is possible to at least temporarily hide from him. And yet he clearly has access to important information that Adam and Eve do not have.
Right. Though I also always wondered if he was just kind of like a you know, sky daddy, playing dumb, but sort of trying to see what his creations are going to say. Hmm. You know, like when you walk in and you're like, all right, who smeared their food on this window? You know who smeared the food on the window, but you're asking the question because you want to have a civilized discussion about it, and in doing so, prevent more food smearage from happening.
Sure. Well, I think that's a valid interpretation too. I think the other one's more straightforward, but it could be either one. So Barrett points out that it's important that this information is relevant to humans in particular, right?
Yeah.
Quote, suppose a certain minimally counterintuitive agent only knows about Himalayan microinvertebrates. Such a being is unlikely to gain traction as a noteworthy entity and rise to the status of a god, and that's specifically because this entity does not have any information that is useful in any way relevant to humans. Like they don't have to be helpful, right? Gods can be mean. Gods can be bad. Beings with strategic information could be helpful allies or dangerous enemies, as, say, some of the Greek gods often are. Like Poseidon, you know, he wants to wreck your ship and get revenge on you. He's still a god.
All right, next we have number four. This is a big one. Gods must be able to act in the human world in detectable ways. Barrett says, quote, an all-seeing, all-knowing statue that does nothing but sees and knows is not worth transmitting. Gods have to do stuff and be known by that stuff, or at least to have done something. Otherwise, it's just not a concept that's going to travel.
Sure. Or to be likely to potentially do something in the future.
Right.
Yeah. A god that has no interaction whatsoever with the world usually isn't going to form a religion. People aren't going to have beliefs about that kind
of
thing.
Right. Like, for instance, think about UFO religions, right? Mm-hmm. They tend to involve ideas of, say, well, okay, the aliens came in an ancient time, or the aliens are speaking to us now, or the aliens will come and save our you know, dying culture. But if your UFO religion says the aliens are out there, they've never come, they've never communicated with us, and they never will come, but we worship them as a god, that doesn't make any sense. Why am I what am I getting out of this relationship?
Yeah. Now, again, this is one where I would say that none of these rules are things where you can think of no possible exceptions, because like I can think about – I guess like in the Gnostic religions, there are some types of god that are like very, very removed. You could still say that their actions have some like downstream effects, or like very important downstream effects on the world. But there are like some types of gods or god-like type concepts that are at least a very distant remove from the goings-on of the world. But often in those cases, there are like sort of layers below them who do interact more directly.
Right. Or in some cases, they're more esoteric variations of a god that is worshipped more popularly in a slightly different form.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's move on to five. Gods must be capable of motivating behaviors that reinforce belief.
Yes.
Behaviors such as ritual and prayer, and they need to be reinforcing behaviors. For instance, Barrett makes the example that the ritual can't promise to produce 8-foot children because there will be no 8-foot children around then to reinforce this. Now, rituals that promise happiness, contentment, even financial gain, these at least you can make an argue that, look, here's the proof of the ritual working.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and it doesn't have to be clear proof. I mean, as long as there could be some kind of ambiguous way of interpreting that the rituals are having an effect,
right?
Then I think that's still okay. But yeah, he's saying that like the ritual can't guarantee results that it won't actually deliver.
Right. If you say if you tithe at 80% to my new religion, you will live forever. Like that's going to bite you in the butt eventually, and then your religion's going to fall apart.
But it is funny how far out on the limb you can kind of get with this. Like as long as there's some kind of ambiguity where you're not really sure, or maybe you don't see it not working for other people or something.
Right.
Like there, you know, the prosperity gospel is incredibly popular, but I think that there's enough ambiguity that you don't necessarily know what's going on with everybody else who's trying it. There's enough wiggle room to say like you're not quite doing it right.
Right. It inspires a certain level of dishonesty among the people that are practicing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the center of it, you generally have an individual that's perpetrating a con job.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is about the appearance of wealth. And then, of course, in most of these cases, they're leeching money, right? They are financially benefiting from the scenario.
Uh-huh.
And then it's not like you have to carry this out forever. You know, con games have a beginning and an end usually, right?
Yeah. But then, of course, there are, again, even if you're only understanding religion in a totally naturalistic way, there are all kinds of benefits that religious rituals can deliver. They can deliver like maybe, strong, tightly bonded communities with people who help each other. They can deliver a sense of happiness and contentment. All kinds of like psychological and social benefits could be perfectly naturalistic outcomes of religious beliefs and practices.
Right. So even, prosperity gospel church, which is vilified to a large extent, and in many cases for good reason, you could still have that kind of a church community that would have a lot of benefits to the members of that community. Likewise, you could have something positive and beneficial sort of emerge out of a more restrictive totalitarian belief system. Like maybe there's some concept within that religion that resonates and works, and then the individuals practicing it run off and start something new with that concept that actually works for them. Arguably, an example of this I've heard is in Scientology, there are members of Scientology or former members of Scientology who have claimed that they don't care for the organization or some of the culture there, perhaps, but they like the rituals, they like some of the technological ideas and some of the practices that are utilized. They see value in them, and they attempt to spin them off into something separate from the central church of Scientology.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, especially the lower levels of Scientology are almost in some ways indistinguishable from like a self-help program that's basically designed to like give you confidence and motivation to take steps to achieve your goals and that kind of thing. And, you know, with stuff like that, you can certainly see how just having a program that's supportive and telling you to move confidently towards the things you want could be perceived as very helpful, could actually be very helpful in producing motivation for that kind of behavior, even if it also implies things about, you know, like bombs from space and aliens in you and ghosts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, as long as all that stuff's minimally counterintuitive. I mean, because that's the
that
thing.
That does seem maximally counterintuitive, but I don't know.
I don't know. Sometimes, at least, I see people criticize – you see this the thing with any religion.
Uh-huh.
Someone is liable – in one religion, they're liable to criticize the other by saying, that's crazy.
Right.
That's wonky. How can you believe in that? And without actually looking at the details of their own belief system.
Sure.
And I mean that's just part of it.
But, well, yeah, it's what you've come to accept as normal. Mm-hmm. And this is a thing actually about that's come up in the theory about being counterintuitive, you know, religions needing counterintuitive elements, is that like as you get used to a religion, the elements that used to be counterintuitive become less counter – they become intuitive.
Ah, and then you need the next spin on it, right?
Yes.
You need the mashup.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. We're going to have to go ahead and break right here.
This one went long.
Yeah, this one went a little bit long, so we're going to have to bust it into two episodes. Certainly, there's going to be more Santa in the second half than in the first half. In the meantime, if you want to check out other episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, go to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That'll send you where you need to go. You can find us anywhere you get your podcasts. And wherever that happens to be, just make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. That really helps us out.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hi, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.